quest to discover just why the city of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, has rapidly evolved to become one of the state's trend-setting cultural meccas, I spent 3 days exploring and visiting with an array of passionately engaged locals. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me as we visit with the executive director at Visit Eau Claire Destination Marketing.
Empty nesters, baby boomers, and retirees enjoy the lakes and the parks and the events and the camaraderie.
We'll visit with the manager at the Riverfront Farmers Market.
Earlier in the morning when we first opened, we get the people that are serious about buying come in, get what they need, and leave. But around 9:30, it's the people that want coffee and a roll and to be with their friends and meet family down here.
A 19-year-old musician student.
I'm actually studying business at the university just because it makes the most sense with what I want to do with music.
And the owner of Forage EC.
It's a neighborhood kitchen, commercial kitchen, culinary incubator, and event space in the old Uniroyal Tire Factory.
And then we'll visit with a 39-year-old high-tech multimillionaire who's invested millions of his own money revitalizing his hometown's Anchor Hotel Conference Center, and with millions more invested in the new Performing Arts Center.
We formed the foundation at the end of last year, and we have four primary topics that we are working on. That is the arts, health, housing, and education.
And then we'll stop in for a visit with the owner of a hop-centric brewery startup in the heart of Eau Claire.
We're using oatmeal and wheat to give more body and more texture and more flavor, so we try to match that with a really good aroma to really try to make almost a beer that tastes like juice that doesn't have any fruit in it.
I am Linda John, and I am the executive director for Visit Eau Claire.
How long have you been an Eau Clairean?
I have been an Eau Clairean for 25 years now, and I've been doing the same work for Visit Eau Claire during that entire time.
And this is a passion more so than anything else.
It's a passion, absolutely. It's not a job at all. If it were a job, it would be the best job in the city.
And whether or not you're working in your position or not, you would love Eau Claire just as much,
gosh.
I can tell.
Absolutely. And, you know, I did raise 2 children here and saw them growing up and took advantage of all of the amenities as a family during that time. It's a wonderful place to live. Both of my kids ended up going through the education system here and the university system here. And we went to the parks and the festivals. And it's a great family place. Mm-hmm. I loved growing up here. And now I'm finding it to be a great place as an empty nester to continue living here. It's known as a really great place to retire, although I don't have immediate plans for that. But the things that families enjoy and students enjoy, I think empty nesters, baby boomers, and retirees also enjoy as well. The lakes and the parks and the events and the camaraderie.
Coming in as a newcomer, having been here a couple days, I'm still almost in a state of shock.
Really?
I went out with your daughter bike riding, 10-mile bike ride, across rivers and through parks, and I kept thinking we were in the country.
Right.
But you turn around, and there, inches away, is downtown.
Right.
That's mind-blowing.
It really is. I like that you put it that way. It's easy for us when we live here to take certain things for granted, but it is something about all of the amenities of a rural location and an urban location all in one. And in ways, when we're marketing the city, we are the small town for markets like Minneapolis-St. Paul, and we're the big city for so many rural towns in a 50-mile radius from here. We are a regional health center, a regional education center.
University town.
University town, retail, and entertainment. So we are the regional big city for many, many people as well.
We just toured your new theater and event center, and that's incredible.
The Pablo Center for the Arts at the Confluence, and that has been a project in the making for many, many years, as you probably heard. It's amazing for us who have been working on that for many years to see it really coming out of the ground. It is a crown jewel right now of our city, and we're very proud of it.
There's another palpable sense that I picked up being here, the friendliness and the pride of everybody you meet in this town. It's kind of like they know it's a secret, you know, and yet they just live it and love it.
Yeah, there's no pretenses here, really. No. What you see is what you get. We are very friendly folks here. And like you said, it's not surfacey or fake at all. It's authentic. And we take great pride not only in what we have, but in how we do things. We don't want to do things half-baked. Quality is very important, and that lends to the pride that we have when a project is complete. We all feel very good about that. And as you went around the community, you might have noticed connecting of the dots. All of a sudden, you start, some of the stories connect where the brewery beer is being sold at this restaurant, and the woodworkers' tables are showing up in this hotel, and yeah, the dots are connecting, I'm sure.
And that's, again, that paradox. That's what you would find in a small rural town of 1,000 or 900. Mm-hmm. But what's your population?
We have 68,000 just in the city proper.
But literally, you don't find this in a 50,000 population town.
That it has that small town feel.
Yes.
Still.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's kind of like nobody gave you guys the message. You know?
Yeah, yes, exactly. And it is that helping your neighbors, knowing your neighbors, and then helping them. There's a lot of give back spirit here. I don't know if you've come across any of those examples yet, but just like Ramon's Ice Cream, they have the tip jar that they have.
Oh, yeah. And that,
yeah.
And this is like the employees do it themselves.
The employees choose. So the employee of the month gets to choose the charity where all of their tips go. So it's that give back spirit. It's really cool.
It really is. And then there are other subtle things that I don't even know if you realize, and that is, as I walk around, wherever I've walked around, and like I said with your daughter, we bike 10 miles and I've probably walked 15 so far, and no trash, no litter, no graffiti anywhere. And it's like, how do they do that? I mean, I followed the gutter for a whole block just looking for a piece of litter. Couldn't find it.
Yeah. And that does speak to the, you know, the pride of the people also. But I think this is a great opportunity for me to really do a nod to our public services and our city employees.
But I haven't seen any little street cleaner people. Yeah,
yeah, interesting. But, yeah. You know, it's both. A lot of the projects and just way of life here, it is a combination of public and private. But you will see people walking on the street and picking up the trash themselves. You will see service clubs organizing on certain days for cleanup days. But you also will see great pride from our city staff in taking care of our community as well.
And again, no graffiti. Haven't found one yet. I'm still looking. I know you
but
got,
we have murals.
But I know you got a graffiti somewhere.
We have art. We have art on building walls. But yeah, again, pride in how we express as well.
And then your passion for food.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
there's that.
Is like, wow, you guys live to eat, I think.
Yes, that is very true, and we really find ourselves celebrating the locally owned restaurants and
the farmer's market.
The farmer's market and locally grown products.
And you have like the co-op grocery store.
The co-op, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if you've heard yet about our technical college developed a brand new, it's opening for its first semester, a culinary management program because of all these restaurants needing the chef talent and even the line cooks and all of that. So they've just created a beautiful facility to be able to have a certificate all the way up to degree programs for the culinary arts as well to support that culinary scene here.
That's so cool. Well, I have to come back.
I
missed that.
Well, what we found is that we didn't have enough talent because the chefing is an art in itself. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have it. These chefs were getting sort of, you know, recruited from the competitors. And so there really was a shortage of talented chefs. Mm-hmm. And so this degree program, the technical college saw the need, the gap, and went to town to try to fill that. We all worked together that way.
That's so cool. And for the younger people growing up in college age and whatnot, they don't leave. That's really cool.
It wasn't always that way. Mm-hmm. There has been a sea shift in that in the last 8 to 10 years, I would say. We used to kind of have this term called the brain drain where people would go to school here and then go to the cities.
Yeah, and not come back.
We still have efforts. Like, I'm going tomorrow night to the Minneapolis market to talk to former Blue Gold alums to make sure they're aware of all the things going on here in case they want to come back.
Right.
But there's a lot more happening organically where people might not even leave in the first place.
Right.
And then we have a lot of what we call these boomerang Blue Golds where they went to school here, they moved away for 5 years, and they're coming back to raise their families
and
such.
Cool. And then you have a high-tech guy that was from here, went away big time, and by choice and volition came back.
So Zach Homestead, and you'll see him roaming around here. He owns this hotel. He started Jamf Software. He started out at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire on a work-study program working in the computer help desk. And then through that, developed this software knowledge and products and started in a small shop. Eventually grew, and now his world headquarters is located here. And that building was built probably 3 or 4 years ago, and what he was finding is he didn't have good lodging options for his clients, vendors, employees that were training in other markets around the world. And so he purchased this hotel and opened it in 2016 with a $21 million investment.
Wow.
And it's pretty phenomenal.
And his software, I think it was your daughter or somebody was saying, that it's like one of the largest app developer for Apple computer. That's crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all Apple-based app products that, in fact, some people are saying, like, Apple probably should have been the one doing this, but it was a gap for them, and he found it. And so it's definitely Apple-based products that he's in. It's a very successful company. So that company has now been sold, and so now he and his key investor partners from that have created a foundation to do good work for the community. And there, he went to high school. He went to North High School here. Never, to my knowledge, moved away permanently. Travels all over the world, of course, but his parents live downtown now. He is seen around town all the time, and he's probably not even 40 years old yet.
That's crazy.
That'd be my guess. I guess I'm at about 38 or 39.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we should go meet him.
Yeah, if we run into him, he will definitely sit down and chat with you for sure. So we'll keep our eyes open for him.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything you want to add?
Well, just that the combination of our music culture, our art, our culinary that you mentioned, our entrepreneurial spirit, all of these things really do, as you notice, kind of work together to make this a pretty special place. And I just encourage people to visit Eau Claire. If they want to plan their trip, go to visiteauclaire.com. And we're super excited to be opening the new visitor center as part of the Pablo Center. My name is Linda John at visiteauclaire.com.
My name is Zach Homestead.
And Zach, where are we?
We are at The Joint in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, also known as the best bar in the world.
And Eau Claire is your hometown, or you grew up here?
Hometown, yes.
So you went to high school here?
Yep, I went to North High.
In college?
I went to UW-Eau Claire for 7.5 of my 8 years of college.
When you were in college, you got into computers, right, and programming. What got you first?
Yeah, I was looking for a job my sophomore year of college and ended up getting a job at the IT center on campus, which is now known as LTS. My first boss was a guy named Matt Unger, and he kind of took me under his wing and taught me everything he needed to know about supporting Apple in an education environment.
And at what point in Apple history was this? Was this LC2?
As a little after that. It was right around the time the G3s were introduced and the new, right before the iMac. So this is 1999.
What got you and why did you become a Mac dude?
I always gravitated towards the Mac just because
intuitive.
It was a lot of artists were drawn to it, and I was a musician in college. Drawn to it just for the lack of technology that's in your way. It's really about trying to help you create what you're trying to create as quickly as possible.
It was Macworld that propelled you and made your first successes, right?
Absolutely, yes.
It was apps. Tell me how that developed.
Yeah, so in 2002, we started a company called Jamf. And it was entirely based about taking our knowledge that we had acquired working on campus at UW-Eau Claire and trying to take that knowledge and help other people do it. So we started building some software around some of the best practices that we had developed. It just continued to grow from there as Apple skyrocketed from 2002. That was one of their lowest revenue years in their entire history. And, they broke a $1 trillion company a couple weeks ago. So it's we have, at very different scale, grown right along with them.
Yeah, and that's mind-blowing. You grew your company huge. I mean, it's like big time. And I can't even believe I'm talking to you because you should be a suit, right?
Yeah, this is my daily attire right here.
Which is a black T-shirt and Levi's.
Yep.
Tell me more about the growth of your company and how it went, and you ultimately wound up selling.
Yeah, so again, we started in 2002. We didn't really start bringing on employees until about 2007. From that year forward, we just really continued to grow by adding about 30% employees on top of what we had before that. So at the end of 2007, we were about 13 people, and the end of last year, we were, I believe, about 750. So we've grown to a company. We've got somewhere between 8 and 10 offices around the world right now. We just added our 9th at the end of last year. The two largest ones are in Minneapolis and Eau Claire.
Describe what you're doing today, what the company does.
Jamf still provides enterprise software that allows any organization to bring in as many or as few Apple products as they want. So if someone's bringing in their first 15 iPads to a small creative firm, we can make that really easy for them. If IBM is rolling out 250,000 laptops, MacBooks, we can make that really easy for them.
So you've had a real life shift. You've backed away from day-to-day corporate.
Right. I still am a shareholder, but I have no day-to-day responsibilities.
So you have your own blank canvas. You can infill. You can do whatever you want, and you've chosen to stay here and live in Eau Claire.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of the projects you have done and are doing.
Yeah, so over the last 5 years, we've been trying to focus the energies that we have outside of Jamf, doing what we can to revitalize our downtown area. So it started with us actually building the building that the Eau Claire Jamf office is housed out of. That was built by a company that we started called Pablo. Originally, Pablo was supposed to do nothing other than build that building, but we kind of had fun doing it. Really, that building was two things. It was one, to give Jamf a home to be able to stay in downtown Eau Claire because we couldn't find space that actually worked for us down there. But it was also built in the TIF district of the Confluence project. So we were going to do two birds with one stone, get a great office that we could stay downtown in, but also help this project along from a public standpoint. After that, one of the next things that people in our town were pointing at as to why nothing can ever work downtown was this old hotel that was very decrepit. And we had a moratorium on putting our employees up there. We had probably about 4 years where we didn't let anyone stay there because it was just so bad. And we looked at that and said, it's not actually because of a lack of need. It's just because the product is so bad. So we ended up letting that go to sheriff's auction a few different times. We ended up buying it back from the lender who foreclosed on it and bought it at sheriff's auction. We were definitely way in over our head on that project at the start. But about a little less than two and a half years later, that opened as the Lismore in downtown Eau Claire.
And that's a Hilton flat?
Yeah, it's underneath the Hilton property. Yep.
Now it's a first-class place that draws people, and it's a place where you're proud to have your visiting people come. Right?
Absolutely. I hope it's a better experience than people hope or are expecting when they come through to Eau Claire. And that, you know, it wasn't just the normal everyday people like me that travel, but we really built the top floor out for artists that are coming through town. So someone that's coming to play in the next few months at the Pablo Center when that opens, we hope to give them an experience they don't expect to have, both in the performing side, but also in the hospitality side of their visit.
At your lower end of the room rates are very affordable, very attractive. That blew my mind.
Yeah, I see advertisements for them when I'm browsing the web for about $109.
You're going, wow. But you would not expect that. I mean, you walk in the door and you expect $199 and up.
Yeah.
And then you're high end, you have the suites.
Yep.
Talk about a little about the food and beverage, because I can tell is a passion of yours and means a lot.
Yeah, as we look at everything that we're trying to do in the revitalization of our downtown, the one phrase that we come back to constantly is quality of life. And so for me, being someone who traveled for about 13 years, 14 years straight now, one of the things that really makes me happy when I travel is food and drink. I love being able to experience new food. I love experience new restaurants and bars when I travel. And that's one of those things that we wanted to focus on in those properties. So when we acquired that hotel, one of the things that was really interesting and fun for us was that it wasn't just 112 rooms, but it also had a coffee shop, a restaurant, and a bar that we could fit into the footprint of it.
Do you have like pioneer blood that you have to build, you have to create? I mean, if you had $1 billion, that's almost besides the point, that you would still build a new log cabin.
I think it is definitely part of who I am to wake up and look for what's next, but I think more than anything, it's a sense of responsibility that we have. We've been very fortunate, very lucky in the things that we've done over the last 15 years, and we feel a very strong responsibility to take that and do good things for our community with it.
It's interesting because, again, you could live anywhere in the world. You could do whatever you want. You're set, but you choose by choice to stay here in Eau Claire. Really awesome.
Accurate, yeah.
So you're involved in the Performing Arts Center?
A proponent of it, and our foundation that we started last December, Pablo Foundation, is one of the largest donors of it.
What I find most touching about you is you, by choice, chose to put your energy and your money to make your town a better place for everybody to live.
and tell us the why, like what makes you do that.
I think it really just comes down to the word of responsibility, and that's something that's been rolling around in our heads for the last 5 or 6 years here, is that we have opportunity with our, the phrase I liked that I learned last year was, yeah, you have time, talent, and treasure. And we have, every single person has different amounts of all of those, and we're trying to take the amounts that we have, and we really feel a very strong responsibility to use that to help other people around us. And we're definitely not done. We're definitely not helping everyone yet. We got a long way to go to get, I think, to where we would like our community to be, and I think where I hope our community wants to be. But that's the driving force behind it, is just as a kind of a relentless responsibility to wake up and help.
It's rewarding for you, isn't it?
It absolutely is, yeah.
Talk to us a little bit more about your foundation and its primary mission and vision.
Yeah. So we formed the foundation at the end of last year, and we have four primary topics that we are working on. That is the arts, health, housing, and education. And if you look at that, that is in a lot of ways related to the commercial sides of what Pablo as a company does. So we look at housing, hospitality is very similar to that. We do a lot with health through the food that we do. We're very focused on the arts, which is why the Pablo Center was such a just a natural thing for us to put our money behind. So over the next 10 years, I'm really excited to see what that foundation can do to have an impact on Eau Claire and the Chippewa Valley.
Let's talk about backstory of the word Pablo. That's a great story.
Yeah, so I, in high school and in college, was a musician. It was a life that I've left way behind. But one of my favorite record labels growing up was a record label that Norman Grant started called Pablo Records. He named it after Pablo Picasso. It's one of those things that always stuck with me, as I have so many albums on that label that I just love and are so unique. And so when we were sitting around trying to come up with a name, that popped into my head, and we didn't have anything better. At that point, again, Pablo was really supposed to build one building and be done. So I don't know if we expected anyone to ever know that name.
Pablo lives on.
Yeah, and I love the backstory of it.
For you, personally, segueing the music, in high school, for example, where were you at?
In high school, I was studying jazz piano. And that was really what I spent the majority of my time in high school. And as I got to college, I continued doing that, but also started studying classical a lot more seriously.
Instruments?
Just piano.
So, Zach, here we are at a dive bar in the heart of Eau Claire that is everybody loves, called The Joint.
Yeah.
And this is, you're kind of, I've heard it said, if you want to find Zach, you might try the
joint. Boy. Yeah, if you look at this place and its history, you just look around at all of the pictures of musicians and the playbills on the walls here, to think that all of these people came through our little town. Bill Evans' signature is up on the playbill right there. I mean, the fact that Bill Evans played piano in this bar blows my mind every time I walk in. And so I've been really fortunate to get to know Bill and Nelly, who Bill owns the bar.
Have you ever played piano here?
So I believe the joint just had its 47th birthday last week, since Bill took it over, or Bill bought it back in the day. The story that he tells is, one day on a whim, he just said we should have music here, walked down to the end of the bar, picked up the phone, called one of his friends who knew Ahmad Jamal's booking agent, and the next thing they know, they have an agreement for Ahmad Jamal to swing through Eau Claire and play. And so he started with Ahmad Jamal.
Where do you go from there?
Right. Yeah, from like 74 to 89, these ridiculous people that should never have, you know, spent an hour in Eau Claire, much less be on the stage and play.
A narrow little tavern, man.
Yeah. And so just be able to sit in that history and sit and look at the playbills of these people that were here is just, it's mind-blowing.
Here it is today, and you still love the place.
Yeah.
What a comfort factor for you.
Yeah, I think, this is your first time here.
Yeah.
You're pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone feels welcome here. I think it's one of the most unique spots in Eau Claire that I don't think anyone walks in and feels unwelcome. I think that's what every establishment strives for, and I think this one does really well. You see there's two dogs within 10 feet of us that both feel very welcome. Yeah, there's just something about it that is home.
Zach, what an awesome pleasure to meet you and visit with you. It really is.
Yeah, great to meet you as well, Tom. Thanks for being here.
In love I've always known.
I'm Mac. I'm the public relations manager at Visit Eau Claire.
And you brought me down to the farmer's market, which happens more than just on Saturdays.
Absolutely. So you and me are here on a Wednesday, but The market also takes place on Thursday afternoons, but Saturday is when it's really happening.
Tell us about the facility itself, because it's pretty substantial. It's architecturally awesome, right on a river, right in the heart of town.
We're right now standing in Phoenix Park, where a lot of community events take place, and the farmers market is just one of them. But this pavilion, it's so open, like you said, right along the river, and it allows for this market to take place, rain or shine. It's an absolute gem for our community.
And the town is an extraordinarily walkable, bikeable town, so I imagine a lot of people like you would either walk here or bike here rather than take your car.
Yep, every Saturday morning I'm biking along the Chippewa River State Trail to get here. Usually afterwards I'll then bike down to Shift Cyclery and Coffee Bar or somewhere else to grab a brew as well.
Tell us about some of the unique aspects of the farmers market, some of the produce that is distinctive to the area and the region, and part of it, like we were talking about earlier, the Hmong people who came here after the Vietnam War.
Yeah, I feel like because of the diversity of the producers, I'm able to experience fresh produce in a way that I otherwise wouldn't have been able to. Sometimes walking down the aisles of the farmers market and smell something that I've never smelled before, and it smells fresh and delicious, and strike up a conversation with the producers, and it's something that I've never tried before. And it's a really great way to become more involved with the food that I'm consuming.
There are people that come down here, and this is their breakfast stop, right?
Yeah, especially on Saturdays. There are some more food trucks making some really incredible brunch creations out of fresh produce, and there are also some bakeries with some unique items on the menu, and this is easily my favorite Saturday breakfast place.
One-stop shopping, yeah.
Absolutely.
And to your left there, the end of the farmer's market, it's like a park that just continues and rolls along the river. Would that be a place where there might even be live music going on simultaneously?
Yeah, so there's actually live music happening right in the middle of the farmers market.
Oh, wow.
During the Saturday showcase, but on Thursday evenings, there's live music happening in the labyrinth that Phoenix Park centers itself around. And like you said, the park is seemingly endless, and as soon as you hop on the trail that it is connected to, you'll find yourself in another park within 5 minutes.
And the artists set up shop on Saturdays too in
their
own segregated little area, right?
Yeah, so on Saturdays they have the artist market set up where you can grab some new jewelry or some handmade soap, and although it's separate from the produce vendor side of things, it's still a great addition to everything that's happening here, and it definitely adds to the ambiance of community that we have here at Phoenix Park.
Mac, thanks for sharing.
Absolutely, it was fun.
Okay.
Well, good morning. My name is Kristen Dexter, and I'm one of the owners of Forage EC, which is a neighborhood kitchen, commercial kitchen, culinary incubator, and event space in the old Banbury Place in the old Uniroyal Tire Factory here in Eau Claire.
So when did you start the business and why?
My partner and I bought the business about a year ago, a little over a year ago, because we both have passion for food. We come from different places. She's had a 25-year culinary experience working in all sorts of food-based businesses, and I am just simply a foodie. I've been a foodie and a cook, a home chef all my life. This was an opportunity for us to share our passion for food with the community, and we also have a passion for building community over the table.
One of the most fascinating aspects of your operation is its multidimensionality, in that you provide a venue, say, for a food truck guy.
Correct.
To prep and make their food, and they wouldn't have that space any other way. It'd be too,
correct,
maybe too expensive.
That's exactly what we do. So we're among the things we are is a commissary kitchen. So we provide a home base for the food trucks. There are several places in town and in the greater Chippewa Valley that do provide that service, but then what we provide additionally is that licensed commercial kitchen, a spacious kitchen for other chefs to use and for other home cooks to use.
And again, this is a circa 1917 manufacturing plant for tires.
And now it's a wedding venue or a party venue as well as that other aspect.
Yeah, it's great to have that building full of life again. You know, the guy that bought it gets a great deal of credit for reinventing that whole space. We like being there because it still is in the neighborhood where a lot of the former Uniroyal employees lived. And so we like the fact that we are able to have this kitchen in a neighborhood. And, you know, certainly those factory jobs are gone and the good paying jobs are gone. But we like the idea of that building still possibly leading to some economic development for local people. We'd really like the neighborhood aspect of the kitchen to become more of our business plan.
So the whole Banbury place, it's kind of an incubator in a sense, isn't it? Business incubator.
It really is. It offers, you know, affordable rent. And so people who are just starting businesses have the opportunity to establish themselves in a space outside of their home. I think working in the home can be very difficult, and so having that space kind of legitimizes your business, and the low rent offers you know, the opportunity to blossom.
That's what I was thinking, because it could be a deal breaker. You just can't do the downtown prime location financially, but you could pull that off and then grow from there.
Exactly, yeah.
And then, as far as urban renewal or whatever, as an economic center, I see it, and I know you do, is that place growing and growing and becoming a little district, a destination in itself.
Yes.
That might become high rent, trendy in some future generation.
Well, that's entirely possible. And that district will connect with another district just to the north of it, which will connect to the district that we're currently standing in now, the Phoenix Park area. So there's a lot of development, residential, industrial, and business development in this area. And all of those districts will connect and feed into one another. There's a lot of opportunity to collaborate. One thing that my business partner and I pride ourselves in is our open-mindedness to collaborate with other people and kind of imagine what isn't currently being done.
And let's loop back to your primary mission and one of them. And if I understand it correctly, you do cooking school, right?
We are not exactly a cooking school, but we offer cooking classes.
For groups, or how does it?
For anybody. Yeah, we'll take an individual, or we will teach a class. It's more of a demonstration at that point, but we'll teach a class or a demonstration for 50 people, 80 people.
Well, by default, you're a school because you taught me.
Well, no, I think you already came with the skills. I think you were being a little modest.
I don't know. My wife would say differently. Anyway, so who would sign up typically, and how would they find out about you?
We have a website. We're currently undergoing a brand new website development and logo rebranding and all of that. Right now, we're on social media, and that's been working for us. We get a lot of business via that. We appeal to people who are interested in food. When we find out that there's a cook who specializes in Moroccan food or French or Vietnamese or Filipino, we reach out to them and try to bring them in and say, hey, you can teach a class. And if they say, no, I can't, I'm not professional, we then encourage them by saying that neither of us have been to culinary school. And yet we have this business that centers around food. And so, yes, you can teach a class. And, again, it's just bringing that.
And they do.
They do, right. They find out that they can do it. And we also have professional chefs come in. And so, really, again, it's going back to that idea of a neighborhood kitchen. And our neighbors can come in here and share their knowledge.
That's so cool. So, again, here we are at the farmer's market in the heart of town. In a perfect storm, in one of your cooking classes, would we all come down with you and first shop and buy our produce and then go to the kitchen?
We have done that. We have had cooking classes where we begin down here, we buy the produce, and at that moment we decide on the menu, and then we walk back to the kitchen and prepare the meal. I might even do that today. I've got a group of adult students coming in.
Oh, grown-ups.
And we. So we're, one of the other things we do is provide kitchen skills and basic guest service skills to adults who have had difficulty finding employment.
Oh yeah, talk a little bit more about that, because that's one of your passions, basically economic functional training for people to mainstream.
It is. I'd call it one of our overarching values is the idea that everybody deserves and should have access to healthy food that nourishes themselves and their families and our community. So we have partnered with several agencies in town whose primary job is workforce development, and they refer to us adults who have had barriers to employment, whether it's mental health issues, poverty, maybe not finishing their high school diploma, things like that.
Or even physical disability.
Yes, of course, yes. So any kind of barrier, and then we just give them very basic skills. So again, we're not a culinary school, but we're just giving them basic skills that will, you know, upskill them and allow them to go into the workforce in the food industry, which currently is suffering a shortage of well-trained workers.
So you have relationships with the hotels and the restaurants and whatnot, so have some direct contacts so you can refer and whatnot.
Especially the restaurants. With my business partner having been in the restaurant industry, she has a lot of those contacts. And yeah, so we are making inroads.
Can you think of a success story?
Yeah, our first cohort actually, we had five students. Two of them were offered raises. One of them was offered a promotion, and the other two, I believe, found jobs. I don't know currently what their job situation is. I know that we have ourselves hired several people that we have trained because we've identified them as really great workers, including a woman now that we're talking about hiring on in a semi-permanent basis.
Wow.
She is an amazing prep chef, and I'd love to have her working in our kitchen.
How cool. So win-win-win.
Absolutely.
Not bad. Yeah. Pretty cool to be able to be so passionate, looking forward to go to work.
Yeah, it really is. I go to bed thinking about food. I wake up thinking about food. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, thanks for sharing.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. For further information.
Well, my name is Kristen Dexter. You can reach me at forage.ec@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram at forage.ec and Facebook at forage.ec. We are available for any questions. We like to imagine any event. We like to think of ways that we can help people succeed in their home-based business and branch out and maybe one day have their own brick-and-mortar store. So we're all about nurturing and fostering and collaborating on success.
I love it. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to meet you.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Okay, Tom, take
care. So it's Sage Leary?
Right.
And you're local?
Yes, I am.
Grew up here?
Just north of here, actually, up by Holcomb area.
So you've always played acoustic guitar? Your primary instrument?
I mainly play electric, I would say, but this is kind of like a acoustic gig, so.
How many CDs do you have out now?
Just these two. This one I recorded when I was 14, this one I recorded when I was 16.
How old are you now?
19 now. I just turned 19 about a week ago, so.
And are you at university here?
Yeah, I'm actually studying business at the university just because it makes the most sense with what I want to do with music.
What do you want to do with music?
I want to make a living at it, first of all, but actually first before that, I want to make sure people are having fun and having a great time. And
what's your favorite style of music?
I'll say blues because that's my favorite just because you can just play what you feel.
Sure.
And it's a really great format to do that in. And then I take that and add it to, like, popular music or just mix different things that I like with it and just kind of works well. So I'm playing for tips today. Anything you leave in the jar is always much appreciated.
Faces I care about and love I've always known. Memories, some good, some bad.
Deidre Barrickman.
Deidre, you are the manager of the Farmer's Market?
Yes, I am. Yes.
This is your baby.
It is. I'm very proud of it, too. I love it.
Yeah, it's like a mother.
Yeah, it really is. Yes, I oversee, and even the building that we're in, you know, if I'm not here, I feel like I'm kind of the owner of it, too, and like to take care of that.
Yeah, really. You're all worried.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so cool. So how long have you been involved in the farmer's market?
I started as a vendor 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And then I was a charter member of the board of directors a few years after that. And I have been the manager. This is my 11th year.
Interesting. When did this happen, this new incarnation of the awesome architecture, the open air, the covered roof with skylights?
So it was finished in 2006, and we moved in July 1st of 2006. So this is our 13th year of being in here.
And where did you get the money? Was it just grassroots donations?
The city owns this. There were some grants from the state and the federal government, and then there some city dollars went to it, too. Also, our Farmers Market Association donated $100,000. half of that coming from our vendors and the other half coming from donators in our community.
Is this one of the coolest farmers markets in Wisconsin?
Well, you're not asking the right person for that, because I'm going to say yes, absolutely. It is, it is. And I just love the positive feedback I have, you know, even people that have bigger farmers markets wherever they live, you know, from people that travel, you know, I'm hearing a lot of positive things that this is one of the best markets that they've been to.
That's really cool.
It is.
Not a Saturday, so I can't experience it, but I'm told you have an artist market adjoining on Saturday.
Yes, we partner with an art store that's downtown, and they have about 20 artists that are local too. They have rules on that, just like we're about local too. So that happens on Saturdays throughout most of the summer, from the end of May into September.
And in many respects, this really is a community center, isn't it?
It is. You know, it's not just a farmer's market or just an artist market. It's sort of an event in the city, but it happens, you know, every Saturday. And then, you know, during the week, we have maybe lesser things going on, you know, during the week. But, you know, our crowds on Saturdays are around 5,000 people.
Wow.
We had a professor at the university that did some analytical counts on it and came up with that for us.
So it's also a meet and greet place where you probably see people and friends that this is where you
yes.
bumped into.
When we did a customer survey before, the number one reason everybody came was the fresh produce,
right.
You know, that. The second thing, and it was a close one, was to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
So earlier in the morning when we first opened, we get the people that are serious about buying come in, get what they need, and leave. But around 9:30, it's the people that want coffee and a roll and to be with their friends and meet family down here. We usually have live music under the clock tower there, and they face out that way, and so people, that area is very full. It's a pedestrian area, so the area is very full of people watching the live music. And Sage here is one of our musicians that comes a couple times a year.
Love it. And you turn around and it's almost like you're in the country.
Yeah.
What's the river name out front?
This is the Chippewa River. And just like a block down or so is the Eau Claire, and that's where the confluence happens. I actually saw an eagle flying over this morning,
nice.
And that is not an uncommon thing to see.
In downtown Eau Claire.
Exactly. Isn't that beautiful?
Do you know how spoiled and lucky you are?
It's hard to know because I grew up here,
right.
But I do have a great appreciation for it.
Yeah.
I really do. And I love to see that Eau Claire is making the riverfronts accessible to people, and people do use the rivers a lot, so it's wonderful to see. On a hot day, and probably later this afternoon, you'll see a lot of inner tubers going down.
Mm-hmm.
College students that age tend to do that during the day.
The slow flow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. All right, well, thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, I'm so glad you came, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your time in Eau Claire, too.
Definitely, I already have, and I don't want to leave.
Oh, good. Hey, we'd love to have you as one of our residents, too.
I would be honored. Website?
Yes, we have one.
You can share.
ecdowntownfarmersmarket.com.
Thanks again.
Thank you very much. And my name's Deidre Berrickman. I'm the manager of the Downtown Farmers Market.
Faces I care about and love I've always known. Memories, some good, some bad. Family and friends we've had. It's a place I love to...
Awesome, Sage. Somebody wanted to find out more about you?
Go to SageLeary.com, or just look up my name, Sage Leary, on Google. That's SageLeary.
Okay, so when you're famous, you promise you will wave at me when I'm in the audience.
Sure.
Sage, thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Feeling your warm hand in mine. Don't you know it feels so fine? Yeah, this is how I want to spend my time.
My name is Curie.
And here we are at a very special museum.
It is. This is the Chippewa Valley Museum.
Tell us about the highlights of the different exhibits and showcase immersive sort of things. We have kids groups here that are having a great time, that are hands-on.
Yeah, well, we have our exhibit Farm Life, which is really about farming in the community, but fun things for kids. It's not just looking at old tractors and equipment, but it's a calf pen where kids can prepare the calf for the fair, or they can try out the garden or work in the kitchen. Because a farmer, it's a family event. It's not just somebody in the field or in the barn, but it's everybody pulling together. Our other main exhibit is Changing Currents. And for kids, we have our fishing pond, because up north, in our tourist economy. We have lots of fishing opportunities. Mm-hmm. We have places where kids can learn about what it was like to be an American Indian or Ojibwe way back in the day, or even today. So we have the past and the present.
How do you make that connection for the kids?
We have a wigwam where kids can enter into and see some of the items that would have been in a wigwam 200 years ago. We also have more modern examples of harvesting traditions. So we have spearfishing today, as you can see it. So we have a video of spearfishing.
And what are some of the other things that the kids most love about coming here that you see them just light up?
They love seeing our 23-room dollhouse with all our miniature dollhouse items. They love our ice cream parlor. That's a real fan favorite for school groups.
Is that a historic, recreated, old-fashioned ice cream parlor?
It is. We have it set up as a 1950s vintage look, but the ice cream parlor itself, the equipment comes from the turn of the 20th century.
One more great kid allure and attraction here.
Our city bus. Our preschoolers love to hop on our city bus where they can sit and drive and be a bus driver for an afternoon.
For further information, website and location.
We are in Carson Park in Eau Claire. Our website is cvmuseum.com, and they can find all of our different exhibits and hours right there on the website.
And it's walkable and bikeable from downtown?
It is. It's just a short jog across our Half Moon Lake. Carrie Ronander.
Carrie, thanks so much.
I'm William Glass. I'm the president of the Brewing Project in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
So how long have you been brewing beer?
We have been brewing beer since 2016, actually 2015. We got kind of a weird start how we were at, but we're just a little over 3.5 years old.
So you were a Marine, and this is a whole second life for you.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm on my third career. I think I've got at least two left in me. I was in the Marine Corps totaling 8 years, went in right out of high school and didn't know what I wanted to do, and it was probably a good idea to do that.
So now, in your third incarnation, beer is your passion.
Yep.
And you know it. You studied it, you've lived it, you've drink it.
Yeah, for sure. Beer is just, honestly, it's so much fun. There are so many aspects to the brewing industry. So many people just think of beer as being this fun thing that I do with my friends, you know, at night after work or on the weekends. But for us, it's developing new recipes, it's wholesale distribution, it's operating as a retailer because we've got a very busy tap room, and it's melding them all together. So it's a lot of fun, it's a lot of work. It's definitely the most stressed out I've ever been in a career.
Are you brewmaster? And you have a couple other guys that brew with you?
It's funny that you say that because I haven't brewed beer much for the last year and a half, but I just brewed like my first batch in a while about 2 weeks ago. We've got three brewers on staff helping out with brewing, packaging, cellaring. Yeah, so I basically come up with a lot of goofy ideas and we all work together to make it happen.
So where is your beer consumed? Is it mostly on site and within restaurants in Eau Claire or across Wisconsin?
Probably 95% of our beer is sold outside of the brewery. We work with a traditional wholesaler in northwestern Wisconsin, but we also self-distribute to southern Wisconsin, specifically Madison and Milwaukee. And our largest market, which is actually closer to us than those markets, is the Minneapolis-St. Paul area.
What's interesting, too, because you're relatively new, out of the chute, and yet you're already rocking and rolling. How do you explain that?
We're making beers that I think a lot of other breweries don't want to try to make because they're very difficult to make. We do a lot of kind of high-risk beers, a lot of beers that use super expensive ingredients. We kind of push the boundaries. We've made some really ridiculously complicated beers as of late.
Give us some examples of some of your beers that obviously people are loving because you're going.
We just actually made one super cool one here. We collaborated with a brewery out of Greeley, Colorado called Weldworks. I've got a friend that works over there, and we had this idea that let's come together and make a super cool beer. So we made a kettle soured double milkshake IPA, which is just it's a ridiculous concoction that took almost two totally different fermentation profiles, actually three. There are three different yeasts in that. There are four different varieties of hops. There's peach puree. There's gummy peaches in it. It's a crazy, weird beer, and it's super expensive to make, but it's tasting real good right now, and I'm hoping that it'll be ready in about a week, week and a half. So
I was tasting one that was hoppy in your face, and yet awesome. Tell me about that one.
We're a very hop-forward brewery. We make a couple of Imperial Stouts, but most of our beers are super hop-forward. We're dry hopping the heck out of our beers. We're putting a ton of very exotic and very expensive hops into our beers. And through the process that we're doing, what we're trying to do is give huge aroma without it being overly bitter. So we're using, honestly, like oatmeal and wheat to give more body and more texture and more flavor. So we try to match that with a really good aroma to really try to make almost a beer that tastes like juice that doesn't have any fruit in it.
So you have no fear and no boundaries?
No, not at all. We have dumped out beers in the past because something was just a little bit too far out of bounds. But no, there really isn't anything we won't try. And I think that is a big part of the success that we're having today, is that we're really trying to push the boundaries. And we're making a lot of beers that other breweries in Wisconsin aren't making. So
they might be copying you someday?
We've seen a little bit, but, you know, that's a cool thing. Another cool thing about this industry is that we're all kind of in it together. All the little guys, we help each other out. We were at beer festivals last weekend talking process with other small brewers. As far as I'm concerned, the more breweries making good craft beer in small facilities like ours, the better.
Right.
It's awesome. It gets people to come out and check you out. It gets people to be more adventurous when they go to their grocery store or their liquor store to pick out beer. So I'm all about it.
Only because we're out of time and I got to go. I got to say goodbye. But before we go, website, how somebody would find you, and if they're traveling around Wisconsin or Minnesota, what's the name, the label they're going to look for?
It's The Brewing Project. Project is spelt with a K, so it's www.thebrewingproject.com.
Can I ask you why you spell it that way? Just for fun?
Yeah, well, kind of for fun, but also that, to be perfectly honest, I couldn't get the domain name with a C, and it was more difficult to trademark it with a C, so we kind of took like the old world German with the K and threw it in there, and you wouldn't believe how many people think we spelt our name wrong, but... So, yeah, you can find us on Facebook at The Brewing Project, and we do a lot of stuff on Instagram, too, so that's at The Brewing Project. And again, my name's William Glass.
William, thanks for sharing. How awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Wisconsin. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.
Home is where I'll be. It's living deep inside of me. It's love sets us free. I'm on my way back home, home. Yeah, I'm going home. Faces I care about and love I've always known. Memories, some good, some bad. Family and friends we've had. It's a place I love to be. Living deep inside of me. I'm going home, home. Yeah, I'm going home, home. Yeah, I'm going home. This is how I want to spend my time.